Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark Delight podcast with Beans. If you were in the video show, which you guys are welcome to go back and watch on Rumble X and Getter, you will see a clip of the gentleman that the defense brought in the Rust case for Hannah Gutierrez. Hannah Gutierrez was the prop handler on the set of Rust, the movie where Alex Baldwin shot and killed somebody. And their firearms expert commits atrocities the likes of which have rarely been seen by a firearms anyone in the courtroom while trying to demonstrate these weapons to the court that doesn't know whether or not the gun is loaded. The clip will be in the show notes for you. I just don't have much else to say about it than that. If you saw, you saw. But what we're going to talk about today in the beginning of the show was Super Tuesday. Super Tuesday, which was truthfully an absolute rout. Donald Trump routed Nikki Haley. He destroyed her in ways I don't think have been seen in primaries for a very long time. Just to give you an idea, and we all knew this, but the exit polls in Virginia, just in Virginia, 92% of Haley's voters approve of Joe Biden and his performance. 87% of them say they're satisfied with how things are going in America right now. If there were ever a straight up campaign commercial or any kind of activism commercial for getting rid of the open primary, it would be Nikki Haley's candidacy in 2024. I want to say, happy birthday to Molly. Yesterday was her birthday. Happy birthday to Molly in the chat. Also, today is Brian Cates' birthday. Happy birthday to Brian Cates. Happy birthday, Brian. You're not watching, but that's okay. Nikki Haley is dropping out of the... For her to continue at this point would just be criminal, honestly. She's going to be dropping out today. We have a lot of races to talk about, though. This, it's interesting because the AP has this website tracking the Super Tuesday, which I thought was very intuitive and easy to follow. They grouped all their races together. We're going to go through them all together today, but their vote totals are different than other places, which if you are a fan of elections is no surprise to anybody. However, let's start in good old Alabama. Donald Trump won the presidential primary in Alabama by 70% or so, bringing in 83% of the vote with 497,739 as of right now. 93% of the votes counted. We're going to move on to Alaska, where Donald Trump won. With the turnout is just scary in Alaska, guys. 99% of the votes counted. He won by, again, 80 points with 9,243 votes. The congressional primaries are on different days in some of these states than the presidential primaries are. August 20th are the congressional primaries in Alaska. Let's move to Arkansas. Arkansas, Donald Trump winning 50 points, 205,000 votes to 49,000 for Haley. There were no other races on the ballot in Arkansas, I guess. That's weird. California, very important. California. Yes. Alaska has ranked choice voting. It's very bad. California, Donald Trump won 78-17. And we've got a bunch of other races in California to look at. Most importantly, for me, the Senate special primary to fill Dianne Feinstein's seat. Steve Garvey, baseball player, Republican, played baseball in California his entire career, new to the political sphere. The AP here has Steve Garvey beating Adam Schiff with 48% of the votes counted by 4 points. That is something. However, the AP, other results from, this is from, who is this from? I don't know where these results are coming from, but this Senate California primary has Schiff up by less than a percentage point. So needless to say, what happened in California with this race is interesting, okay? Schiff was up against a super duper conservative, Katie Porter. And Schiff ran targeted ads against Garvey. And a lot of people strategically are saying like he did that to elevate Garvey so that he could take over and get rid of Porter, because Schiff was really worried about Porter. But Porter barely brought in over 500,000 votes, 16%. So I don't know if this is a backfire or what, but I think that California in general really doesn't like Adam Schiff. And this is a statewide race rather than a House race. So Adam Schiff, I think, may be in a little bit of trouble. I'll be watching that. We have a bunch of other primaries. In District 22, the Republican won, but he was one of the ones who voted to impeach Trump. In 27, the Republican won. In 41, the Republican won. In 45, the Republican won. In 47, the Republican won. There, you know, there's a runoff if they don't get a majority. So that's California. Keep an eye on California. Colorado, very, very interesting. Trump actually won Colorado 63-33. I wanted to show you. I pulled this up. Hold on. Here we are. Here is Colorado. This is the Secretary of State in Colorado. I don't know if you guys have seen this. Why? She's insane, in my opinion. She looks crazy. I don't understand what's going on there. This is in response to the Supreme Court decision, which we'll get to in a little bit. Let's just watch this.
My larger reaction is disappointment. I do believe that states should be able, under our Constitution, to bar oath-breaking insurrectionists. And ultimately, this decision leaves open the door for Congress to act, to pass authorizing legislation. But we know that Congress is a nearly non-functioning body. So ultimately, it will be up to the American voters to save our democracy in November.
What kind of crazy is she being? There is somebody running this NPC. There is somebody behind her with a keyboard and some hastily put together programming circuitry. What is going on with these people? What is wrong with these people? Even when I try to do the crazy eyes, I have a hard time. Do I really need to see? I mean, if you can't see, I get it. They're all the same. It's very weird. Very, very weird. She looks like AI. Everyone in the chat saying she's AI. Lolly35, she looks like AI. She does. She looks exactly like an AI. All right, moving right along. There's Colorado for you. Colorado has congressional primaries in June, on the 25th. Maine, Donald Trump winning 72-25. You see what I'm saying? Half the state hasn't been counted yet, but I think we're pretty clear what's going on in Maine. Massachusetts, Trump wins 59-36. It's a little bit more scattered here. 83% of the vote count, 81% of the vote counted. Minnesota, he wins 69-28. I mean, I'm telling you, do we need to even go through all of this? Again, Minnesota's August 13th primary for the down ballot. North Carolina, redistricted. It upheld. Donald Trump wins 73-23. And also, very, very important in North Carolina, Mark Robinson for governor, 64-19. District 13 is a big hot mess. But there's a lot of down ballot in North Carolina after the redistricting. So we'll keep an eye on that. But I mean, Mark Robinson's amazing. If he wins governor in North Carolina, that state is saved. Saved. Oklahoma, 81-15. And I have to look into turnouts. That's the next thing I'm doing today. I'm going to analyze turnouts. 98% of the vote in Oklahoma. Tennessee, 77-19. Their congressional primaries are on August 1st. Texas. Good old Texas. Thank you, Texas. 77-17 there. And we had a bunch of other down ballot races. Ted Cruz beating. What is interesting to me is that Ted Cruz got more votes than Donald Trump. That's just weird. Everyone's talking about the Crenshaw race and I'm going to have to take a look at that. I know there was somebody that came in. There's a runoff in District 23 between Brendan Herrera and Tony Gonzalez. There's a runoff in 12. So there's some runoffs going on here. I will look into the Crenshaw race and his challenger. I saw some stuff float across my timeline today on that very thing. But Texas, Utah, the Utah governor and Senate and stuff is the 25th of June. But Donald Trump wins Utah 58-40. Interesting in Utah. Vermont, the only state where Haley was able to eke out a win in Vermont. The only state that Haley was able to eke out a win. And Virginia. Virginia, 63-34, Trump. And, I mean, June 18th for the primaries there. So there's your Super Tuesday rundown. There's that crazy woman again. Super Tuesday, eke out a win. Eke out. Like, just barely get one. Eke. Yes, Tim. Tim in the chat is criticizing my use of the word eke. It's E-E-K. Eke. The Colorado win was important, obviously, because of what we see going on with the Supreme Court there and Republicans suing on this bogus insurrection nonsense. And I have a clip of what happened the other day after that SCOTUS decision, which was after our show. I have it somewhere here. Why it's not in order, I don't know. Where is it? Bear with me a second. I have to pull this up. It's the Newsbusters clip of everybody going crazy. Here it is. Let me move it back where it belongs. My bad. This is the crazy reaction of the media after the 9-0 decision in SCOTUS. Texas. So people are asking about Fallon. I think that Fallon is a runoff in Texas, which is interesting in and of itself. Dade Fallon in Texas. No, it's eek. The way I spelled it, because I said so. Okay, here we go. I'm a little scatterbrained today, folks. Bear with me. We're going to talk about the SCOTUS decision in a second.
We've learned that it was a 9-0 decision ruling that Donald Trump can be on the ballot in Colorado and other states.
I'm not confident that will produce a result that's good for American democracy.
This is actually what I had been concerned about. I had been concerned that it should it go to the Supreme Court, they would rule this way.
I'd laugh if it weren't so sad.
My next guest says Donald Trump is still an oath-breaking insurrectionist. Do you have confidence in the Supreme Court? Do you think this court is partisan?
The court itself may have overstepped.
The court went way further than it needed to go.
Our colleague Melissa Murray has called this Supreme Court the YOLO court.
The criticism of the court is that they're playing interference.
Not since Bush v. Gore have we seen a court that's had this many opportunities to interfere in the election.
The headline here is this, that this is a unanimous ruling, but if you scratch the surface just a little.
This is a 5-4 ruling on part of it.
This is actually a 5-4 decision.
No. It's 5-4.
Trump will take this, spin it, spread the misinformation, disinformation on it. So it's a win for them.
He's on the ballot and voters will vote, and he looks like he's headed to become the Republican nominee for president.
You can't save a people from themselves. If they're determined to reelect him after he organized that insurrection, then there's nothing to stop the people from doing that.
Not only that, but like, listen, guys, they're complaining about the court, but they're the ones that caused this. Just let the man be on the ballot and let the voters make their choice. There is no insurrection. There was no insurrection. There was a civil case where the partisan judges decided there was. Listen, it wasn't a 5-4. A unanimous Supreme Court decision is not a 5-4 decision. However, there was some dissent about certain things. Amy Coney Barrett and the liberals joining together did not agree with the quote majority, which was the whole court. It's so stupid when they said that this rests in Congress's hands to make legislation. Amy Coney Barrett said, you know, this is a time where we shouldn't be inflaming tensions, and that opinion inflames tensions. And then the other people were like, no. It's very important. We're not saying he didn't commit insurrection. And it's EKE. All right. I submit. Okay. EKE. Fine. Anyway. They did this to themselves. Okay. And then now they're complaining about it. I mean, what did they expect to happen? And then in a couple months or a month or two, when the Supreme Court comes out on the immunity ruling, if it isn't exactly the way the right wants it, they're going to say that the court needs to be this and the court's terrible. And right now we're all praising the court. This is just the way it's going to go. So, yeah. I want to move to the Fannie Willis bit now. There's some new stuff coming out in Fannie world. In Fannie world, new sources are coming out. New people are coming out with new evidence. Someone has come out that used to work in or still does work in the DA's office saying that Wade actually had a garage door opener for Fannie Willis's condo in his car. The Congress, the Senate committee is looking into this. They've subpoenaed Ashley Merchant, the attorney who had the text messages. That hearing will be live. I believe that it's today. Wednesday, March 6th at 9. It starts in 2 minutes. Maybe we can do some live watching of this together. Because why not? Let's see, Georgia Senate Fannie Willis. They never start on time, but I've got it here for all of us. We can watch it together a little bit if you want. David J. Schaefer. He's a Georgia prosecutor. He's offering proposed testimony to reopen this disqualification hearing with more evidence. in the event that the evidence were reopened regarding the various motions to dismiss or disqualify the DA from Fulton County and or Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade, he would offer the testimony of attorney Cindy Lee Giger, a co-chief deputy district attorney for Cobb County. On Friday, March 1st, she spoke via telephone with the undersigned counsel for Mr. Schaefer and Mr. Anulowitz. The testimony she would offer is the following. From in or around August of 2023 through January of 2024, Ms. Yeager had numerous in-person and other conversations with attorney Terrence Bradley. This is the friend of Nathan Wade, in which information relating to DA Willis and Mr. Wade was discussed. In the course of their discussions, Mr. Bradley told her the following, that they met in that Willis and Wade met during 2019 at the conference, like they said. Mr. Wade began his relationship, romantic relationship with DA Willis at or around this time. Mr. Wade had definitively begun a romantic relationship with Ms. Willis during the time that Ms. Willis was running for district attorney. Mr. Bradley stated that he had personal knowledge of the relationship between Wade and Willis and included details regarding the use of Yerdy's apartment and meetings. Yerdy is the friend who testified that they were romantically involved with each other. Bradley stated that Wade personally prepared his own divorce complaint against his spouse and told Mr. Bradley to sign the divorce filings and to file them on his behalf. He wrote them himself. The debate on the word eek continues robustly in the chat. It's E-K-E. E-K-E. I was wrong. Guilty as charged. I was wrong. It's E-K-E. Eek is the sound you make when you see a mouse. Eek! E-K-E is when you sneak in something. You just barely do it. You eek it out. Sorry. Mr. Bradley stated that Mr. Wade personally prepared his own divorce complaint. Based upon these statements, it is Ms. Yeager's understanding that Mr. Bradley did not begin representing Mr. Wade until November of 2021. And we have not begun at 9:02, but we will begin shortly, I'm sure. So that's interesting. New witness alleges Nathan Wade had a garage door opener for Fannie Willis's condo. More people are coming out of the woodwork with information that undermines the testimony of Fulton County DA Fannie Wade and Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade. Fannie Wade. Fannie Willis. Typo. Judge or not. Judge Scott McAfee heard closing arguments in the motion to disqualify Willis and Wade from the election interference case against President Trump and 18 co-defendants on Friday. He said he would return a decision in 2 weeks. On Tuesday's show, Megyn Kelly introduced new witnesses, Manny Arora. Georgia lawyer Manny Arora apparently had several conversations with Bradley between September and October, according to a separate document filed by attorneys. Bradley allegedly told Arora that Willis and Wade definitely began a romantic relationship when she was running for DA in 2019 and that he worked on her transition team. While that information was known, Arora was apparently privy to another detail that came up during Bradley's testimony. Attorney Ashley Merchant.
It's now just a few minutes after 9 o'clock. I was waiting for two other committee members, Senator Hatchett and our minority leader, Gloria Butler. I think they're both en route, but we do have a quorum, so we'll call our meeting to order.
This is
the Senate Special Committee on Investigations. We have issued a subpoena on February 28th, and that was issued to Ms. Ashley Merchant, who has been in the news quite a bit lately and had apparently quite a bit of documentation that we thought would be of interest.
Here is the live hearing.
We also subpoenaed her to testify before the committee this morning.
Different sort of
podcast permitted
today
by our rules. Ms. Merchant responded to the subpoena and as required by Monday at noon. And the Secretary of the Senate, Mr. David Cook, has all of the documents produced, and he will keep those in his safe room, I guess we'll call it, David, his repository. I can see you've got a couple of banker's boxes full of records. These are available for any committee member to review at your pleasure. Just get with Mr. Cook. We are keeping them under lock and key, so to speak, so they will not be made available to the public until we determine whether any of them involve confidential information or not. So we'll have those available. The minority whip took some time last night, and I think he may have been the first person to really review all of the records and spent a few hours there in the Secretary of the Senate's office to review this information. I'm going to make a determination after we have heard this testimony and heard from Ms. Merchant as to whether or not some or all of those documents will remain confidential. I remind the committee members, in our rules, you are bound to confidentiality unless things are publicly disclosed. So for now, we will be reviewing some of the documents during this testimony. But I will ask you, Ms. Merchant, to let us know if anything, in your opinion, is confidential that you would not like for us to publicly disclose for whatever reason. And then I will review the records as well. There are some personal financial records in there that I'm not comfortable at this time disclosing those publicly. But just to sort of set the ground rules here, I will conduct the interview with you. You will be sworn under oath. Ms. Brenda Elwell is our court reporter. She will be making a transcript of all the proceedings, and that will be publicly disclosed for the press if you want to go back and double check and see exactly what was said. That will take a couple of weeks to prepare that transcript, but this meeting is also being live streamed, so it should be easily accessible to the public and anybody interested in this. I'll begin. Ms. Merchant, you are here under a subpoena to testify. I'd like to go ahead and swear you in. If you will please raise your right hand. Do you swear that the testimony that you will give before this committee will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do. All right.
So, well, if you will just continue with the transcript as we go. If you get hung up at any time and I fail to hit the right microphone and you can't hear who's saying anything, let me know. The way our procedures work is that I will be asking the questions and minority party will have an opportunity upon request to ask questions as well. I've discussed this with the minority whip, Senator Jones, and he may or may not ask questions towards the conclusion, or maybe even at a break. If you want to, just let me know. Ms. Merchant, would you please just identify yourself and let the committee know? You see all our name tags to see who's on here. You know who we are, but let us know who you are and what your profession is, background, et cetera.
Definitely. My name is Ashley Merchant. My first name is spelled A-S-H-L-E-I. Last name Merchant, M-E-R-C-H.
You're going to need to pull that mic a little closer to
you. Thank you. And is it okay? I have a notepad just in case
you're absolutely
I get two
free.
Questions at the same time. I like to make a note to make sure that I remember.
The committee knows the rules. We passed them unanimously at our last meeting, and you actually have the right to counsel if you want to. It's not like a court proceeding where we're going to be having a...
Somebody in the chat's asking, what is this? The Senate in Georgia is conducting their own investigation of what's going on with Fannie Fannie. And Merchant is one of the attorneys who texted with Bradley.
Yes, I'm a criminal defense attorney. I was sworn in representing as a member of the bar in 2004. So I've been a criminal defense attorney for 20 years. I started out when I first graduated from. I came.
Don't know what's up with the sound. Don't know what's up with the sound. Come on, guys. Get this.
Member of the bar. I became a public defender in Fulton County.
She was in the public defender's office. She knows all these guys in there. She's friends with them all. That's the thing. I wish they could get the sound together.
Husband, agent, and we do criminal defense primarily.
Yeah, okay.
Other roles or affiliations? I've seen just press articles about you.
Yes, yes. So I do. I've been very blessed to have a lot of active roles in the community. I was of the Cobb County Bar Association Criminal Defense Section. I was sworn in January as the president of the Georgia Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers.
Okay. Member of
the Bar Association, very active
screen.
In both of those roles.
Bear with me a moment. I want to watch this.
Been honored with several different awards. One from the Cobb
I know that the podcast listeners later on are going to find this a little bit annoying, but this is live breaking testimony. And as you know, it's kind of like something that I love to do. So let's see if I can find a stream with an actual working sound. Live stream.
Unfortunately for that anymore.
There we go.
But and then recently I was awarded at our annual meeting for the Georgia Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. I was very honored to receive award about
so she's no slurk. She's no slouch.
So you are the current president of the Criminal Defense Lawyers group?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And it's the Georgia Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. We go by GACDL. We have about 1,500 members right now.
Did I lose my Rumble stream?
But we're one of the largest defense bars in the country.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about your trial experience over these last 20 years.
So I started doing post-conviction work, which is, you know, after a person is convicted, doing appeals.
Looks
and
like
habeas
Rumble
work.
Went
then I went into
poop.
Misdemeanor trial work at first when I was a public defender. I moved into the complex felony division, which is where the majority of my practice has lied. I do about half of my practice is appeals, appellate work in the Georgia Supreme Court and the Georgia Court of Appeals. The other half is trial work. I specialize in complex felonies, so anything that's mostly in superior court. Every once in a while, I'll have a client who has a state court case, and so I will end up helping them on that, but primarily complex felonies.
Right. And during the course of your practice here in the Atlanta area, tell us a little bit about your involvement, and I'm just going to refer to these as the election interference cases.
Here
I think
go.
There's 16 or 17 defendants. You are involved in those cases, I know from seeing the news.
Yes.
Who do you represent?
I represent a gentleman named Michael Roman. I was hired late August, early September, around, I think it was late August, to represent him. He lives in out of state, does not live in Georgia. No. But so I've been his defense attorney since the time of indictment.
All right. So late August or September of 2023?
Yes. I began working on his case in late August of 23. I think I looked this morning. I filed my official entry on September 1st of 23. And then I negotiated bond for him, walked through the turn-in process, and began negotiations with the prosecutors.
What exactly is he charged with? What's the offense he's been charged with?
He's charged with conspiring to violate the Racketeering Act, so RICO. He's also charged with some of the more specific allegations for him are attempted and conspiracy to file false documents. So essentially, I've classified the indictment. The easiest way for me to classify the indictment is there's the folks that are federal officers. There's the folks that are charged in the alternate elector process, and then there's Coffee County. He's in that middle section.
So that's the alternate elector process?
Yes.
And that's what, those are the documents that are deemed to be false there?
Yes, yes. That's what he's charged with. He's charged with false, you know, filing false documents, false swearing, things like that, forgery.
And to be clear, you do not represent any of these alternate electors?
No, I only represent Michael Roman.
And you don't represent Donald Trump?
No, I do not represent Donald Trump.
So your involvement in the case is just for Michael Roman?
Yes, exclusively Michael Roman, and that's my duty.
You have produced quite a few documents to us.
Yes.
Do you have any concerns as to whether any of those documents are protected by attorney-client privilege?
I don't have any concerns about that. I do have some privacy concerns because you mentioned earlier.
This is Michael Roman.
That there were some financial documents that are not redacted, and so those would need to be redacted. That would be the only thing, but they're not.
Phone
numbers. I believe I redacted all the phone numbers, but there are some financial documents that are probably sensitive.
Good.
Special assistant to the president,
as far as
director
Mr. Roman
of special
is concerned, is
research.
He given you permission to speak freely about his case and about the evidence or documents you've accumulated in the course of his defense?
Yes. We went over the subpoena that I received and the classification of documents that I was asked to give. All of those were things that I obtained through discovery, not discovery from the state, but through my own. So we have a protective order in the case. So anything that I've obtained through the state could potentially be subject to that protective order. But these were all documents that I obtained through my investigation.
Okay. Most of the members of this committee are attorneys, but
okay.
not all.
Okay.
And I recognize that the general public will be hearing some of this or either now or later. Tell me a little bit about when you're talking about states discovery. What do you mean by that? I know, but right. everybody else may not.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So so we have a statute in Georgia that allows us to do what's called opt-in. So if we opt into the discovery statute, that means we're engaging in reciprocal discovery, which means that the state has to give us a copy of all of the material that they plan on using at trial. They also have to give us copies of anything that would be arguably exculpatory. And so in this case, there's been a lot of discovery exchanged because obviously there's a lot of defendants. And if they wanted to classify something as sensitive, they would do so. And then if we wanted to be able to disseminate it to any third party outside of our practice, we would have to have court permission to do that.
Yeah.
But when we are investigating a case, not everything comes through discovery. So in general, I would investigate a case on my own, and those items are things that I did not receive from the state. So we've got different classes of documents, the documents that I actually received from the state through discovery, through formal discovery, and then documents that I developed on my own.
Okay. And out of these documents that you've obtained from the state through formal discovery that they're obligated to provide defense attorneys to fairly defend your client, some of those have been deemed to be sensitive and that are not freely disseminated?
Yes. The state, how the protective order works, and the protective order is public. It was publicly filed. If the state deems something sensitive, they let us know that. And if we dispute that or we have some reason that we want it to be able to be disseminated, we would have to go to the court and basically argue over that.
Fair to say any of the documents you have provided to our committee were things that you obtained outside of that formal discovery process and are not subject to any protective order?
Yes, I did not. Nothing that was subject to the subpoena or that I provided was something that I got from the state.
So,
and nothing was subject to that protective order. I
basically
went and was very clear.
Everything
that
she's about to provide to the committee, she found on her own. And so if the Willis team of DAs come back and try and say to her, hey, you were never supposed to put this out there because it was under protective order. What she's saying right now under oath in front, well, she's not under oath yet, I don't believe, but what she's saying right now is I found this stuff on my own. It's mine. I found it. It's
in your motion to disqualify Ms. Willis.
I appreciate that. And I was very cautious because I certainly don't want to go against a court order protecting. So I did not disclose any of those documents.
See, she just
so
reaffirmed
tell me
it.
A little bit about the special grand jury process. It sounds like that occurred before you were ever even hired in this case.
It did. It occurred, and my client, Mr. Roman, was not involved in that at all. So he was never someone that was issued a target letter or a subpoena or contacted. So he was never involved in that either. So he didn't have counsel, obviously, since he was never involved in the special purpose grand jury. But in my role defending him now, I've obviously reviewed all of the things that happened with the special purpose grand jury that I have access to. So it's my understanding Ms. Willis obtained an order from, at the time, it was Chief Judge, I believe it was Judge Brasher, who was the chief judge at the time, obtained an order to impanel a special purpose grand jury.
She was sworn in.
You know, and I followed
that
in the news before I was involved in the case because it's very unique. It's not something that happens very often. Normally, when we see a special purpose grand jury, it's some type of investigation into a jail or something like that. So it was kind of unique to see that. But, you know, from reading everything, my understanding is a lot of the witnesses weren't willing to necessarily talk without a grand jury, and so that's one of the reasons that they had to impanel a special purpose grand jury. But it was very unique.
I've been practicing here a long, long time, and I haven't seen a special purpose grand jury to basically advise the DA, apparently, or a subsequent grand jury as to whether there's evidence.
I'm lowering this real quick just to summarize what's going on here. The Georgia Senate is investigating Fannie Willis's conduct and have brought in the attorney of Michael Roman, who was the attorney who was texting back and forth with Bradley, the gentleman who got up on the stand and couldn't remember literally anything throughout the entire deal, okay? She has text directly with him. She has a lot of other information. The Senate subpoenaed her to come in and testify today. She responded to the subpoena. She's sitting there testifying right now. She used to work in the DA's office. She's a criminal defense attorney. This is her testimony. They're asking her basic questions about the case right now. Hope that helps.
you know, witnesses from out of state. They issued a lot of target letters to people back and forth. That there was a lot of people that were targets and then weren't targets, who testified, maybe negotiated some type of immunity, things like that, throughout that special purpose grand jury.
Okay. And is that made public to other defense attorneys if immunity has been granted to any witnesses?
I don't know if it was made public originally. I know that some of it has been provided to us through discovery. We had a motions hearing where the judge ordered that the state give us copies of transcripts because they had everything recorded. So there's a transcript from the special purpose grand jury. It's my understanding there's a transcript from just about everything, but it does appear like sometimes that was cut off. So there are some sections that were recorded, and then maybe a section wasn't recorded, and then they went back on the record.
Interesting.
But it was recorded, which we rarely get in a regular grand jury. We rarely, if ever, get that type of testimony. So that was very unique to have.
Is the state required to let you know if they've granted immunity to any witnesses that may have been utilized in this special grand jury process or in seeking the indictment?
Yes, they are. And, you know, some of that has been given to us through discovery. Some of it has been given to us from other attorneys, you know, the attorneys who maybe represented those parties. There was a lot of back and forth. There were a lot of, I believe this was all public, that some of our state representatives, I think the governor in particular, were subpoenaed, and there was a back and forth over who could grant immunity, who had the power in that office to grant immunity. And that's something that I reviewed in my work on this motion with the DA's office, because Mr. Wade was the one that took over that power. And so the emails that were attached to a lot of the pleadings, it was interesting. It first started out that there was someone else in the DA's office who's actually an employee of the DA's office who was negotiating all of that. And then it evolved to another member of the DA's staff, and then ultimately it was Mr. Wade, and there's emails where he said, I'm it. I'm the only one that can grant immunity. I'm the only one that has the power to do this.
This is why this is important.
I'm in charge.
I'm pausing it real quick. This is why this is important. She just told everybody that Nathan Wade, the special prosecutor who's at issue in this controversy, was now, after a certain period of time, the only person in that office who could grant immunity to any defendant or any witness or whatever for their testimony. That means that the disqualification portion of this just got a lot more interesting. For me personally, I didn't know that. That is new. It's even more important now because he has basically been given the keys to the kingdom, for lack of a better word. He's declaring immunity for people as a contractor who is sleeping with the frickin' DA. Not okay. Here we go.
Involved in the special grand jury process?
Oh, very much so. He was by far the lead of it.
Right. And led the special purpose grand jury.
When that special grand jury was authorized and when it began to meet?
Yes, I don't know the dates off the top of my head, but there is an order, and I can review it. I brought some of the pleadings with me. But it was authorized sometime. So he was appointed in November 2021 to work on this case. It was sometime after that Ms. Willis sought the special purpose grand jury and got authority to do that. And then that went through, you know, several months, and then they issued a report to her.
So he was hired by the Fulton County DA's office before the special grand jury was authorized or impaneled? Okay. And so he was involved from the very beginning of that process.
Yes, and he was actually hired, I believe, before it was even, I know it was before it was impaneled. I believe it was before the order was even issued, though.
And do you know what his role was as what's the official term, a special assistant district attorney?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. He usually goes by special counsel or special prosecutor. I don't believe he goes by special assistant district attorney. I don't think he's permitted to do that.
Just to answer a couple questions coming through in the chat, Reese is saying, how does this affect all of Trump's attorneys and others who signed plea deals? I don't know how, even if Fannie Willis is taken off this case, anything changes. Everything changes if Fannie Willis is taken off this case, because the entire DA's office is disqualified at that point. You can't have another attorney inside the Fulton County DA take this over. It has to move to a different county. The entire thing is quashed. It starts all over again if another county chooses to take it up, which they will not. The only county in Georgia who will take up a nonsense case like this one is Fulton County, given the politics, which is why they are holding on to this for dear life. There is no case in Georgia. The plea deals that were made with Jenna Ellis and Sidney Powell will be everything will be vacated, reversed. Records will be cleared. You would have to literally start the entire case over from the very beginning. You would have to bring in a new grand jury. You would have to re-present evidence. You would have to re-investigate. And as you can see, this process has been ridiculously corrupt. And I would be stunned if another county in Georgia picked this up. I would be stunned. Every attorney I've spoken to about this has said the same thing to me about what would happen here. So I don't know what other attorneys are saying and why, but I know the attorneys that I've talked to have told me that this case is basically kaput. It's too tainted by corruption. The entire DA's office is basically on trial right now. There were arguments made to this effect in the closing statements that I played on Monday's show about how the office is defending Wade in his privilege against Bradley, and it's not their privilege to defend. There's been numerous other... The DA is the DA of this office. The cases they bring rest under her. If she is found to be corrupt and a liar and lied to the court the way is being demonstrated over and over and over again, her cases are in question. Her cases are in question. Reese, you and I will disagree on that point that you're making right now in the chat. We will disagree. This is a big, made-up, corrupt, nonsense thing. We've got 4 minutes. We're going to listen to 4 more minutes. And I know this is an interesting sort of a show for the podcast listeners. My bad. But here we go.
I've studied these statutes a lot, and there's no real term for it. I've heard him go by independent counsel, things like that. But I don't really think independent counsel would be an appropriate term because he's not independent. So I did not know this before, but I've studied, you know, the structure of the independent counsel in the federal system. They're actually a separate office. They have their own appropriations to have a separate office, and they are kept separate from the U.S. Attorney's Office. So that would be where you get the independent counsel term from, or independent prosecutor. He goes by special usually, so special prosecutor or special counsel. And I think that's because he's not independent.
Is this commonly used in the state of Georgia? I don't know the scope of your practice. I'm not familiar with DAs doing this often.
No, and so I do practice throughout the state, and I've practiced in almost every county in the state at some point in my career, and it is very rare. I've had instances where there is special counsel, but those are very limited, and I can tell you about those, and then I can also tell you what I did to investigate that, because I had the same question.
You'll know why we're asking.
Mm-hmm.
The scope of this committee is we've heard a lot of the allegations, and you, as a matter of fact, made most of them, or right. Some of these public. And there's, of course, a public, you know, outrage or uproar or concerns about some of the alleged improprieties that you have brought forth, both, you know, within the in the system, kind of what's appropriate conduct.
Right.
And also financial improprieties. And we're tasked with investigating and finding the true facts and not just taking the press at face value. And that's why we're asking you for documents, et cetera, mm-hmm. so we can independently verify the various allegations that have been made. But we're also specifically tasked with, if necessary, amending existing statutes.
Right.
Or creating new statutes to build guardrails or whatever to essentially restore the public faith in our criminal justice system, in its impartiality and its fairness. And I have looked at some of the existing statutes, but it's very sketchy.
All right.
What is the real authority?
So that's going to be it for us today. You can find this. Just do a search online. You can watch the rest of it with your friends and family. The 2020 election was a travesty. Despite my support for a different candidate this primary until they dropped out, I did hundreds of hours of research, and we continue to report at Uncover DC on the theft of the 2020 election. The election in 2020, in my journalistic opinion, was stolen from Donald J. Trump. Nothing you will ever tell me or show me will change my mind. I spent way too much time in the weeds on this one. And this whole fake electors thing, the way that this was rolled out, the way that they were trying to do this was because every other attempt was thwarted through the court system and otherwise. Any cases that actually got in front of a judge with a fact pattern were ruled on for President Trump or the constituent who brought them. Very few made it that far. They were dismissed on latches. They were dismissed on technicalities. They were dismissed just outright. This entire RICO case that they've brought in Georgia is a debauchery. It is a complete mockery of our justice system. It is a partisan witch hunt that was started purposefully to attack anybody who would ever question the results of an election again. We see this over and over and over again. There is no question in my mind at this point that that is what is going on here. And this time they just so happened to bring in a prosecutor who is insanely corrupt, thought she was way above the law, and is coming back home to roost now in this testimony today and what's going on in the Fulton County, Georgia case. So everybody, I know this was a little bit different today, but we had a live stream of a hearing, so why not? It'll be going on for several hours. I'm sure we'll get more nuggets out of this thing. We will be back with Frank on Friday. Make sure you share this out with your friends. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Getter, and X. And you can also hear the audio replay of this at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on all the podcasting platforms. We will be back on Friday.